Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news, and we'll break down some of the biggest stories from the box office this past weekend. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office expert, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's jump into the news before we get into some box office stuff. I think over the weekend, Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey revealed a first look at Matt Damon as Odysseus. This answers a question that we've had for a long while now of like, who is actually going to be playing Odysseus, the main character of this movie based on the ancient Greek poem. And there was some discussion that maybe Tom Holland would play Odysseus, or I don't know what the speculation was out there in the universe. But now we know that Matt Damon is playing Odysseus, and there's this photo of him where he's wearing what appears to be a pretty traditional looking Greek armor. What did you make of this photo, Ryan? Anything? Do you have any reactions to this?
I mean, it's hard to react too much to it. I mean, it's just a single picture of Matt Damon and like armor, you know, like it looks good. It looks fine. I think it's more like giving us a sense of, okay, Nolan is trusting his movie to Matt Damon, which is, you know, that's interesting to me. Like,
I think the photo itself looks kind of goofy. Like the costume looks kind of goofy, you know, like I think we've come up in an environment where you've had movies like Troy in 2004 or whatever that was, that like was not really well received. I actually kind of like that movie a little bit, but he looks like an extra wandering around in a studio lot or something, you know? And like, of course, in Christopher Nolan, I trust, but I think it's fine at this point to say like, this looks a little goofy. Like it looks goofier than what I would expect from a Christopher Nolan movie. So I don't know if you have a similar thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is just so, I don't know how many times you and I over the years of doing this have come across like either a set image or even if it's an official image and it's out of context, or even like sometimes like a clip from a movie, right? Like, and it's out of context and you're like, oh, I don't know about this. And then when you see the movie, you're like, oh, it looks great. And that was fine. And I just get the sense that this is probably one of those things. The only reason I say that is to say, I almost don't even see these images the way that like your average person probably sees them anymore, because I look at it and give, especially coming from a guy like Nolan, like so much benefit of the doubt to like some studio first look image of a thing. You know what I mean? Just because it's just so, it means so little in the grand scheme of whatever this movie's actually going to be. So I don't know. I'm just more like, I'm excited at the idea of like a ye old, you know, epic from Christopher Nolan. And I like Matt Damon a lot. So I think the idea of him sort of getting to put this movie on his shoulders is what's fascinating to me. Coupled with the rest of the stupid cast he's put together for this movie, like Anne Hathaway, Charlize Theron, Tom Holland, Zendaya, Mia Goth, I mean, I'm sure I'm missing 20 other names. I mean, because this is what Nolan is capable of now. you know, because people, he has the Wes Anderson thing where people really want to work with him, yet people to work with Wes Anderson will take like a heavily reduced fee just to be in one of his movies. Well, luckily Nolan gets money too, so he's able to pay these people. So like he can get whoever he wants, schedule permitting. So like it's first choice down the ballot, you know, like, which is, which means you get the best of the best of the best. So it's hard for me to imagine. Like, I get excited talking about that, and then I look at the photo, and I'm like, okay, I see what he's doing. You know, I don't know. So I have a bit of a different skew on it, I guess.
Yeah, well, just in terms of, like, answering questions, I think the, you know, there, I think I speculated when we first heard that this was going to be a version of the Odyssey that, like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be, like, a modern-day type of thing. That's clearly not happening now. So it does some basic things in terms of giving us a look at Matt Damon revealing that he is the main character, and then also proving what time period this is set in or whatever. So just some basic stuff there. I did want to move on to The Goonies 2, a movie that I think has been rumbling around in the background for something like 30 years at this point. And it seems like there's never really been like serious talks. It's always just kind of been like, occasionally Sean Astin will be asked about it and he'll be like, oh yeah, I'm up for it if everybody else is, you know, that kind of thing. And now it seems like the movie might actually happen, which is kind of shocking to me. But tell me what the latest in this saga is.
Yeah, so to your point, this has been talked about a lot, and there was actual movement on it at one point. Like at one point, Richard Donner had said that Steven Spielberg had actually written a story for a sequel, and that was back in, I think, like 2014. And then, you know, so there's been, it's definitely been something that's been kicked around.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize a story was written. That's wild. Yeah, that was further along than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, that was at one point. Again, this is the telephone game, right? Of like someone's, and again, it's Richard Donner saying it about Steven Spielberg, so you should take it, you know, with some, but anyway, this is, you know, but nothing ever, this is very much, well, we'll talk about this more in a second, but okay, so what is going on right now is that Deadline reported that, I'm going to butcher this name, I'm so sorry, Patsy Ponsiroli, I believe is the filmmaker's name, has officially come on board to pen the script for Goonies 2. Ponsiroli is known best as the writer of the 2021 Western Old Henry, which starred Tim Blake Nelson. He's also got a TV series under his belt called Still the King, and he wrote a very little seen movie last year called Greedy People that I very much wanted to see, but it kind of came and went. So, but yeah, that's a very, not exactly a A-list screenwriter, all due respect. But yeah, so, and this is sort of coupled with what we heard somewhat recently is that Warner Brothers is looking to dust off other like 80s classics from its library, and that included The Goonies 2 and Gremlins 3, another project that has been, you know, kicked around forever and never actually came to pass. Now,
oh wow.
So what I would say is that okay, this was all talk before. What happened last year? Beetlejuice, a movie that was talked about for decades from a 1988 hit, ended up making $450 million worldwide. Do you think that might have had something to do with Warner Brothers finally deciding to actually get these things going? So I think the thing is that, like, we hear all the time, a writer's attached to a thing, it doesn't happen. A writer's attached to a thing, it doesn't happen. I have to imagine Warner Brothers is highly motivated to actually make this happen now. Now, obviously, you have bigger issues there. I think with Beetlejuice, you had to get a couple of core cast members back. For The Goonies 2, you need some of Hollywood's most in-demand actors. You need a couple of people that are tough to work with. You need a guy who is now an entertainment lawyer and isn't an actor anymore. You know, like, you need, there's a lot of things that need to happen. But yeah, this seems to be moving along. No director is attached yet, but we'll see. They seem pretty serious about it. So that's what we got.
So I think one of my most hated opinions is that the original Goonies is terrible. And I saw it, you know, very late in life. And that I'm sure contributed to my overall assessment of the movie, because I know that seemingly anyone who watched it when they were kids grew up loving it and has a real soft spot for it. I do not have that because I watched it when I was 25 or something for the first time. So what's your relationship like to The Goonies, and are you actually interested in what The Goonies 2 might look like?
Like, I love a lot of these 80s movies. Like, I straight up love Gremlins, like, you know, an absolute classic. I love Beetlejuice. Like, having rewatched the original right before the new one came out, I think Beetlejuice holds up maybe is better now than it was then. Like, and I love, you know, some of these cherished classics or whatever. But yeah, The Goonies is one I'm closer with you. I don't think I'm as far as you are. Like, but it's fine. Like, I watched that at a drive-in a handful of years ago when I moved to Austin, and I was like, oh, that was a fun thing to see at a drive-in. Like, it was paired with Raiders of the Lost Ark, so, you know, it felt appropriate. But yeah, I don't, like, I'm not stopping. Like, if I'm channel surfing, I'm not stopping because The Goonies is on. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not that movie for me. So I don't know. I'm closer to you, but I'm not as aggressive, like, towards, I don't think it's bad. It's just, I just don't understand how that became the movie that everyone sort of gloms onto. It's interesting to me.
Yeah. And Patsy Ponsaroli is such an unusual choice to write this movie. And there's no director attached right now. Obviously, Richard Donner, who directed the first one, died a few years ago. So, and then you've also got, like the cast thing that you said. I mean, there are people like Josh Brolin and Ke-Huy Quan and Sean Astin who, like you said, I mean, very in-demand people who are working steadily in the industry right now. So getting all these people back together seems unlikely to me, but and especially if Donner is not there. I mean, you were talking about a comp being Beetlejuice. You had Tim Burton behind the camera for that. So, like, there's a sort of full-on getting the band back together vibe in Beetlejuice that is not going to be there for The Goonies too. And I just wonder how many of these people are going to be like, really, are they're doing this? Like, should I actually come back for this? Like, is Josh Brolin really going to reprise that role and I don't know, in my view, stoop to The Goonies too? But I don't know, other people might view it as like a triumphant return to a beloved character or something. So we'll have to see how this goes. But the last news item that I wanted to discuss with you very briefly is that HBO's Harry Potter TV show might have found its Dumbledore in the form of John Lithgow, which is surprising because he's not a British actor, but he has played British people before. He was on The Crown and played a British character there and evidently did really great in that role. I think he played Winston Churchill. I have not seen The Crown, but I know that he was beloved in that part. Obviously, the Harry Potter franchise has a lot of baggage around it because of the J.K. Rowling of it all. So everyone knows our feelings on that. I'm sure we've talked about that before, and we'll probably have to talk about it again on this podcast since Warner Brothers Discovery is continuing to move forward with this show, which is supposed to last 10 years and is going to be like one season a year. And it's going to be just a full on adaptation of these books in a much deeper way than the movies were able to go. Did you have any reaction to the idea of John Lithgow playing Dumbledore, Ryan?
I don't have a lot of attachment to Harry Potter, really, but I think John Lithgow is, I mean, look, if you're as far as actors who could be cast to do a thing, he's at the top of any list for any character he could maybe be, you know. Like, I love John Lithgow. I think he's amazing. But like, I don't want to sound grim here, but this is supposed to be a decade long series. Like you said, John Lithgow is 80 years old, basically. He's about to be 80 years old this year. I hate being that person. I don't, but it is something you have to think about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I
think so. And like, obviously the Dumbledore character was recast in the movies because the first Dumbledore actor passed away. And then the Dumbledore character is pretty significant toward the, I mean, I'm not a big Harry Potter person either, but I've seen all the movies and he's a pretty significant character all the way through the story. It's not like he just disappears halfway through or something and you don't have to worry about him near the end. You know what I mean? So that's a bold choice, I guess, on their part.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into some box office discussion.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. and free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All right, so Ryan, we wrote a story, I think this was over the weekend, that Captain America Brave New World was on track for a $94 million President's Day weekend. Did the movie reach that tracking? Did it what is the word I'm looking for? Surpass the expectations?
Yes and no, depending on how you want to define the weekend. It was technically a holiday weekend with President's Day being on Monday, so that kind of gives you that four-day weekend. So across the four-day weekend, yes. Across the traditional three-day weekend, no. What I'm going to go ahead and run down the top 10 here. What I'm going to read off for you is the traditional Friday to Sunday three-day numbers, and then we'll go more in-depth after. All right, so Captain America Brave New World topped the charts domestically with $87.8 million domestically over the three-day. At number two, we had another newcomer, sort of, in the form of Paddington in Peru, which opened to $13 million. The only reason I say sort of is this movie has been out for literally months overseas. You know, it was an odd choice to bump it this far back domestically, but that's another conversation which we can have in a minute. At number three, we had a somewhat of a surprising result with Heart Eyes, the rom-com slasher we talked about last week, making $9.8 million, which was almost a 19% increase from the prior weekend. That movie benefited greatly from the Valentine's Day sort of holiday and the buzz going in. Number four, we had Dog Man, which topped the chart a couple weekends ago, made $9.8 million in its third weekend. This one is kind of falling fast for DreamWorks. Not sure how this is going to play out in the long run. At number five, we had one we're going to talk about a lot in a minute. Niza 2, which is a Chinese animated sequel, made $7.2 million in its domestic debut, but that was on just 660 screens, so it had a stellar per-screen average of $10,900, which was the second best of the weekend behind only Captain America Brave New World. At number six, we had Love Hurts, making $4.2 million in its second weekend. That dropped just 27%. That's Ke-Huy Quan's new sort of action comedy. So it had a decent hold, but it also had a not so great start. And like we talked about last week, the line between success and failure for a movie in the $18 million budget range is thin. Heart Eyes kind of pulled it off. Love Hurts didn't. At number seven, we had Mufasa the Lion King in its ninth weekend, still clinging firmly into the top 10 with $4.2 million, actually had a 4.8% increase this weekend. It has now made $687 million worldwide. This is an astonishing leggy run. At number eight, another leggy movie, One of Them Days, the comedy from Sony Pictures that nobody saw coming. Another $3 million, an increase of 5% from the prior weekend. It has now made $43.5 million domestically and one of the early front runners for a big box office surprise of 2025. At number nine, we had Companion, which is continuing to fall pretty quickly. Another $1.8 million, dropped 38% in its third weekend. It's made $19 million domestically to go with $14.2 million internationally. So it's made $33.2 million so far. That's fine for a $10 million movie, just not quite the breakout hit we thought it could be. At number 10, we have another import, and I'm going to butcher this title, in the form of Chava, C-H-H-A-A-V-A. I apologize there. But that made $1.79 million on just 497 screens for a pretty solid per screen average there. And that is what we're looking at.
Okay, well, I guess the question that I have, I wonder if there's any writing about this. I've not done a deep dive yet because I've not seen Paddington in Peru yet. But is there a reason, do you know why the studio bumped Paddington 3 so long with that domestic release?
I truly don't know. I remember it was, I think it was originally supposed to be like an earlier January release. Has this been out in the UK since, I think, December? Like it November 8th. Wow. In the UK. So yeah, it's been out for a while. I honestly truly don't know. There must have been some consideration that Sony looked at the calendar and thought we can counter program against Captain America. And in fairness, that worked out relatively well. You know, $13 million is a pretty decent start for a movie like this.
Yeah, so. What do you think about Captain America Brave New World and its performance so far? Like, I mean, obviously you ran down the numbers there, but just in terms of what this movie needs to do and needed to do and kind of like reputationally for Marvel, like where does this whole thing stand right now?
All right, this is opening a big can of worms. So pretty much from here on out, what we're going to do is talk about this and then we're going to talk about Nizad 2. But so let's really get into Captain America. So, like I said, $87.8 million across the 3-day. It's estimated to make $100 million through Monday. Those final numbers will come out today. Did $92.4 million overseas. So you're looking at a $192.4 million start for the movie, give or take. Let's call it $200 million, okay? Let's just call it $200 million. That's good. That's not bad. The production budget was reported to be $180 million. Whether or not that includes the reshoots has not been clarified, but that is on the somewhat lower end for a recent Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. These have largely exceeded $200 million for the most part, so I was a little surprised to see that number. So look, that's fine, but here is the problem. The movie got a B- on CinemaScore, which is the lowest in the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. No MCU movie has scored that low on CinemaScore. In terms of its comparisons in other ways to other MCU movies, critically, it's got a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, and there are only other two MCU movies that have ever received a rotten grade from Rotten Tomatoes, which were Eternals and Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. Both of those movies were Eternals barely eked past 400 worldwide, and Quantumania made 476 after having a massive opening weekend, and it just plummeted. So then the other things you're looking at are like it has an 80% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but that's like really not good as that's tied with the Marvels, right? So this is low for Marvel stuff. So what does that do for its holds in the coming weeks?
Mm-hmm.
That's really the bigger question, right? Like are those numbers going to be representative of the other MCU films that had somewhat lower runs? You know, because at this stage, a best case scenario is going to be like an absolute best case. If everything goes right with an opening like this, it could get to Doctor Strange territory, which gets you over $650 million worldwide. That's if absolutely everything goes right. It doesn't look like absolutely everything's going right now. So are you closer to that $500 million range? Because given the budget, if that budget is sort of accurate, this movie needs to make about $550 worldwide to break even, give or take. So, you know, I mean, it's on the line right now of getting to that break even number. And I think I would argue in the landscape we're in right now, given that you don't have, you know, Chris Evans and Steve Rogers there anymore, all due respect, Anthony Mackie is not necessarily a movie star. He knows that. He said that Captain America is the movie star. He's said that himself. I think that if it got to 550 worldwide, you could call that a qualified win. But I don't know if it's going to get there now, because again, you also have competition on the horizon, as we're going to talk about in a minute. Nizad 2 is eating up the conversation overseas. This movie did not open particularly well in China. It opened well below what even like Guardians of the Galaxy 3 did in China. You have The Monkey coming out this upcoming weekend. Now that's a horror movie. I understand it's not necessarily gunning for the same competition, but that movie's hitting with very good reviews. In March, you have Mickey 17 and Snow White. This movie isn't going to have an unchallenged run here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just, as we continue to see, people don't just want average from superheroes anymore. The superhero movies that make a lot of money are stuff like Deadpool and Wolverine, which deliver on their promise and are big crowd pleasers. I'm not saying you or I have to love that movie, but audiences did. And, you know, like stuff like The Batman, not these average superhero movies. I liked Captain America Brave New World fine. I thought it was fine, but the word you keep seeing right now is fine. Not great, not you must see it, fine. And what you hear often when something is fine is, I'll wait to stream it because people know they can see it in Disney Plus in 2 months. So, you know, I'm skeptical as to whether or not it's actually going to get to where it needs to get.
Yeah,
that was a lot of me monologuing, Ben. I'm happy to hear your thoughts.
Well, no, this is that was all great context that I needed. I'm curious about, I'm trying to think about big picture on this thing, right? Like, if you take a step back and you're Marvel, you have Thunderbolts coming up and you have Fantastic Four First Steps coming up. So if this movie doesn't do what it needs to, I think if you're Marvel, you're banking on those two movies coming later this year, kind of picking up the slack a little bit and potentially bringing people back into the Marvel fold in a way that maybe this movie didn't or won't over the long term. It remains to be seen. So it's not like they're really going to change tactics, right? Marvel Studios, if this movie doesn't do particularly well. Like, yes, Quantumania underperformed. The Marvels was a disaster financially. And Deadpool and Wolverine can be viewed as an outlier. But even if Captain America Brave New World just kind of disappears, I still don't think the performance of those three movies is enough to get Marvel to drastically change the way that they're doing things. Like, they're still going to be pumping out superhero movies. It's not like Marvel Studios is just going to stop and shutter its doors, right? Like, they have so much committed. They've got these big Avengers movies on tap. Like, we know big things are coming. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is the actual consequence of this movie not doing well? Like, maybe they don't make another Captain America movie starring Anthony Mackie, but, like, were they going to anyway? You know, like, I don't know. Are there any sort of, like, big picture takeaways that you have?
Well, yeah, I do. I do think, because I think the thing is, you know, Marvel has a lot of the stuff in the pipeline for years, so they've got to get to a certain point before they can really change strategies. So what you're doing right now, you've seen Blade taken off the calendar. We've not seen Shang-Chi 2. We've not seen Doctor Strange 3 announced. We've not seen a lot of things, right? What are we seeing? Thunderbolts was moving 2 years ago. That's got to get out. That's got to be done. So that Thunderbolts has been billed as the end of Phase 5 of the MCU for a long time. So then what is Phase 6? Phase 6 right now is literally three movies. It is Fantastic Four First Steps, and then Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars. My read on this is that they have not announced anything else. They're not, well, I guess technically the next Spider-Man movie as well, but that's Sony, not really, right? Like, that's a cooperative effort, but they are speed running to the end of the multiverse saga the way that I see it. They are holding other things back, waiting, deliberating, making sure that they get these things right, because I think that they know that they have to shift a little bit, right? They can't keep doing these same things. I agree with you. It doesn't mean they're going to stop. I do think it means they're not dumb. They see the numbers. Like, they know something isn't working. Like, you can't continue to get 50% Rotten Tomatoes scores. You can't continue to get lower cinema scores and hope that you're going to get your audience back. They know that. They have to know that. Disney has to know that. Kevin Feige has to know that. So something is going to have to change. Either that or, yeah, these numbers will become, you can't suffer too many The Marvels level flops and continue to do a thing. At some point, Disney goes, we're done. You know, yeah. Like, so it does have a consequence. Like, if this movie finishes closer to Eternals than it does to Doctor Strange, yeah, there's going to be a problem. Like, that does go to, and the other problem is that you start looking at, like, okay, what are the movies that have failed for them? Eternals, diverse cast, take some big swings, doesn't really work out. The Marvels, female-led film with, like, a trio of female leads, doesn't work out. Captain America Brave New World, black lead Captain America, doesn't really work out. Do you see a concerning pattern here of what you could easily see in a boardroom of them arguing the movies that aren't working? You know, that's one of my concerns as well. Now, hopefully that's not the takeaway, and the takeaway is that these movies just weren't. I think the Marvels, I don't want to say, I haven't even seen the Marvels, but, like, you know, I don't want to say, like, it was a quote-unquote bad movie, but that movie clearly didn't work for a lot of people, or the interest just wasn't there, whatever. But, so, you know, I guess my counter to your point is that, no, is Marvel going to stop making movies right now? No. But they seem to be slowing down, and they seem to be taking as much of a breath as they can possibly take to try and figure out what the next steps are. So, that's what I would say.
Yeah, that's true. And to your boardroom point, I mean, they have Black Panther as, like, a great example of what can happen when you invest and give a filmmaker with a vision the proper tools to make a movie with a quote unquote diverse cast, you know? So hopefully that would be enough to offset some of those concerns, but I definitely see where you're going with that, and I agree that it's a depressing reality that probably has to be considered. Okay, so I guess our last major story that we want to talk about real quick, we talked about this last week on the podcast, Nizha 2, this Chinese animated movie. Give me the latest on this thing, because it's kind of wild what's happening with it.
Yeah, so I should state that there is a small caveat up top here that you know, this is all taking place in China, and, you know, like, there's a lot of censorship there. There's a lot of, you know, state-run reporting, things like that. So there is a little skepticism with these box office numbers, but ultimately, eventually, they are verified in some way. So, like, Box Office Mojo and the numbers have not updated their databases with these numbers yet, but this is coming from Reuters, which is, you know, pretty rock solid. But so we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but let's get over what is, if we are to assume these numbers are correctly reported, here's what's happened. After 3 weeks of, just barely 3 weeks of being in theaters, Nizha 2, almost entirely making all of this money in China, save for what equates to change in the couch cushions elsewhere, has now made, call it $1.7 billion globally, because by the end of this sentence, it will be there. That means it has passed Inside Out 2 to become the eighth biggest movie of all time, and also the highest grossing animated movie of all time, meaning Inside Out 2 held that crown for about 5 months. And that movie took months to get to the $1.69 billion mark, and it had to do so by making $1 billion internationally. Meanwhile, Nizha 2 has made almost all of that $1.7 billion in China alone. And it's done so in 3 weeks. That's for starters. Yeah, this is unprecedented and it's insane. So what that means is it now sits above movies like Jurassic World at $1.67 billion on the all-time chart. It is the only Chinese-produced movie to be in the global top 10. Within a matter of weeks, it is now all but assured that it will make at least $2 billion, meaning it will pass Spider-Man No Way Home to climb even higher on those charts. It is also guaranteed to become the seventh movie that will make at least $2 billion worldwide, meaning it will join Avengers Infinity War, The Force Awakens, Titanic, Avatar The Way of Water, Avengers Endgame, and the original Avatar in that exclusive list. How high is it going to climb? I think at this point, it's all but assured to go past Infinity War and Force Awakens, so it's probably going to land somewhere between, like, Titanic and Endgame. And it you know, probably at least the fourth highest grossing movie of all time, almost all coming from a single country.
I mean, that is, I just can't wrap my mind. Did this really come as, like, as out of nowhere as it seems, Ryan?
A little. I mean, but let's be clear, like, we're not on this podcast, we don't typically pay attention to this stuff, but, like, you know, you had movies dating back to 2017 when, like, Wolf Warrior 2 made, like, over $800 million, you know, in China, right? And, like, this is why China started prioritizing its own releases as opposed to Hollywood releases, which is, you know, some of what's going on. And then you had, over COVID, like, the Battle of Lake Changjin making, like, 900 some odd million dollars. You know, you've had some of these massive, massive hits. And the original Nizha made $742 million in 2019, which was a huge hit. So it's not like, it's not coming out of totally nowhere, but for it to do this much business, I mean, my God, you know, but you've seen this sometimes, right? Like, so like Inside Out 2 is actually a good example. The original Inside Out was a big hit. I think it made somewhere in the ballpark of 800 million. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know it was a lot. Well, then the sequel makes 1.69 billion, you know, so the sequel made a hilarious amount more, right? So like you're sort of seeing a comparable jump with Nizha to Nizha 2. So this has happened before, like in box office history. It just doesn't happen often. But I don't want to say out of nowhere, but I mean, to do this in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so the numbers so far has verified for sure that it is at least past $1 billion in China. I don't really know how that verification process works. I don't quite know why those databases aren't updated yet, But again, you got this coming from Reuters. It's not coming from nowhere. It's not coming from Joe Schmo, whatever. It's coming from, you know.
Yeah. It could be as simple as yesterday being President's Day. So maybe the folks at Box Office Mojo and the numbers had the day off and are still, you know, working through some stuff or whatever.
Yeah. But Box Office Mojo has like very little other than the domestic data for Nizza 2 in its database yet. So again, I think that they might have a bit more of like a process of getting those numbers verified. Again, this, I don't really know why, but again, the point being is that at this point, the movie has made a fortune. It is shattering records. It is, you know, the only thing that I will say is that on the one hand, it's not great for Hollywood in the sense that, like, yeah, like for sure, China's just going to keep focusing on their movies and it's going to be harder for like Hollywood movies to make money in China. On the plus side, my read on it, and we talked about this a little bit last time, is that, you know, on looking at the global box office, not the domestic box office, the global box office, there is clearly an enormous appetite for movie going still. And look, this added even just domestically. Okay, you want to look at the global positive. This movie made $7.2 million on 660 screens this past weekend. For those 660 screens, those domestic theaters were thrilled with that result. So it does trickle over into benefit. This is why we look at a global marketplace. So as we look for the box office to recover, gigantic hits like this, no matter where they come from, are good for the health of the global box office. So I'm happy to see this, even if it's not, you know, I don't have rose-colored glasses on. I understand that there are some, you know, there's more going on here, but I try to take it as a net positive. So, yeah. You know, that I don't have a lot else to say, but it is truly unbelievable what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like as somebody who likes to pay attention to what's going on in the modern, I guess, like larger film discussions, I maybe need to see these Nizza movies. Like, I am not super up on my contemporary Chinese cinema, you know, but this may be the exception that gets me to at least check out that franchise. I feel like I should have some knowledge of a movie that might be, you know, in the top five films of all time, which is just wild to think about. So yeah, that's a me problem that I need to work on, I guess. But
I'm with you there, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I'll try to link to a bunch of stuff in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
At Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more, up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.